but I force myself to focus. The lights flash horribly, then die, making it almost impossible to move, making it possible for my friends to slip away. "In the alcoves!" a voice roars, yelling over the chaos. "They're running!" More voices join the call, though none of them are familiar. But in this madness, everyone sounds different. "Find them! Stop them! Kill them!" The sentinels on the landing have their guns aimed, while more blur along, barely shadows as they give chase. Walsh is with them, I remind myself. If Walsh and other servants could sneak Farley and Killorn in before, they can sneak them out again. They can hide. They can escape. They'll be fine. My darkness will save them. A blaze of fire erupts from the crowd, curling through the air like a flaming snake. It roars overhead, illuminating the dim ballroom. Flickering shadows paint the walls and the upturned faces, transforming the ballroom into a nightmare of red light and gunpowder. Sonia screams nearby, bent over the body of Renault. The spry old Ara wrestles her off the corpse, pulling her away from the chaos. Renault's eyes stare glassily up at the ceiling, reflecting the red light. Still, I hold on, every muscle inside me hard and tense. Somewhere near the fire, I recognize the king's guards, hurrying him from the room. He tries to fight them, shouting and yelling to stay, but for once they don't follow his orders. Ilara is close behind, pushed on by Maven, as they run from danger. Many more follow, eager to be free of this place. Security officers run against the tide, flooding the room with shouts and stamping boots. Lords and ladies press by me in an attempt to escape, but I can only stand in place, holding on as best I can. No one tries to pull me away. No one notices me at all. They are afraid. For all their strength, all their power, they still know the meaning of fear, and a few bullets are all it takes to bring terror out in them. A weeping woman bumps into me, knocking me over. I land face to face with a corpse, staring at Colonel Macanthos's scar. Silver blood trickles down her face, from her forehead to the floor. The bullet hole is strange, surrounded by gray, rocky flesh. She was a stone skin. She was alive long enough to try and stop it, to shield herself. But the bullet couldn't be stopped. She still died. I push back from the murdered woman, but my hands slide through a mixture of silver blood and wine. A scream escapes me in a terrifying combination of frustration and grief. The blood clings to my hands like it knows what I've done. It's sticky and cold and everywhere, trying to drown me. "Mare!" Strong arms pull me along the floor, dragging me away from the woman I let die. "Mare, please!" The voice pleads, but for what, I don't know. With a roar of frustration, I lose the battle. The lights return, revealing a war zone of silk and death. When I try to scramble to my feet to make sure the job is really done, a hand pushes me back down. I say the words I must, playing my own part in all this. "I'm sorry. The lights. I can't." Overhead, the lights flicker again. Cal barely hears me and drops to his knees next to me. "Where are you hit?" he roars, checking me in the way I know he's been trained. His fingers feel down my arms and legs, looking for a wound, for the source of so much blood. My voice sounds strange, soft, broken. "I'm fine." He doesn't hear me again. "Cal, I'm fine." Relief floods his face, and for a second I think he might kiss me again, but his senses return quicker than mine. "You're sure?" Gingerly, I raise a silver-stained sleeve. "How can this be mine? My blood is not this color, you know that." He nods. "Of course." He whispers, I saw you on the ground, and I thought..." His words trail away, replaced by a terrible sadness in his eyes. But it fades quickly, shifting to determination. "Lucas! Get her out of here!" My personal guard charges through the fray, his gun at the ready. Though he looks the same in his boots and uniform, this is not the Lucas I know. His black eyes, Samos' eyes are dark as night. "I'll take her to the others," he growls, hoisting me up. Though I know better than anyone the danger is gone, I can't help but reach out to Cal. "What about you?" He shrugs out of my grasp with shocking ease. "I'm not running." And then he turns, his shoulders squared to a group of sentinels. He steps over the corpses, head inclined to the ceiling. A sentinel tosses him a handgun, and he catches it deftly, putting a finger to the trigger. His other hand blazes to life, crackling with dark and deadly flame. Silhouetted against the sentinels and the bodies on the floor, he looks like another person entirely.
"Let's go hunting," he growls, and charges up the stairs.
Sentinels and security follow, like a cloud of red and black smoke, trailing behind his flame. They leave a blood-spattered ballroom, hazy with dust and screams. In the center of it all lies Bellicose Larilan, pierced not by a bullet, but a silver lance, shot from a spear gun, like the ones used to fish. A tattered scarlet sash falls from the shaft, barely stirring in the whirlwind. There's a symbol stamped on it, the torn sun. Then the ballroom is gone, swallowed up by the dark walls of a service passage. The ground rumbles beneath our feet, and Lucas throws me to the wall, shielding me. A sound like thunder reverberates, and the ceiling shakes, dropping pieces of stone down on us. The door behind us explodes inward, destroyed by flame. Beyond, the ballroom is black with smoke. An explosion. "Cal!" I try to squirm away from Lucas, to run back the way we came, but he throws me back. "Lucas, we have to help him! Trust me, a bomb won't bother the prince," he growls, moving me forward. "A bomb?" That wasn't part of the plan. "Was that a bomb?" Lucas draws back from me, positively shaking in anger. "You saw that bloody red scarf? This is the Scarlet Guard, and that..." He points back to the ballroom, still dark and burning. "That is who they are."
"This doesn't make sense," I murmur to myself, trying to remember every facet of the plan. Maven never told me about a bomb. Never. And Kaloran wouldn't let me do this. Not if he knew I would be in danger. They wouldn't do this to me.
Lucas holsters his gun, his voice a growl. "Killers don't have to make sense." My breath catches in my throat. How many were left back there? How many children? How many needless deaths? Lucas takes my silence for shock, but he's wrong. What I feel now is anger. Anyone can betray anyone. Lucas leads me underground, through no less than 3 doors, each one a foot thick and made of steel. They have no locks, but he opens them with a flick of his hand. It reminds me of the first time I met him, when he waved apart the bars of my cell. I hear the others before I see them, their voices echoing off the metal walls as they speak to one another. The king rails, his words sending shivers through me. His presence seems to fill the bunker as he paces up and down, his cloak flapping out behind him. "I want them found. I want them in front of me with a blade at their backs, and I want them to sing like the cowardly birds they are." He addresses a sentinel, but the masked woman doesn't even flinch. "I want to know what's going on." Ilara sits in a chair, one hand over her heart, the other clutching tightly to Maven. He starts at the sight of me. "Are you all right?" he breathes, pulling me into a quick embrace. "Just shaken," I manage to say, trying to communicate as much as I can. But with Ilara so close, I can barely allow myself to think, let alone speak. "There was an explosion after the shots. A bomb." Maven furrows his brow, confused, but he quickly masks it with rage. "Bastards! Savages!" King Tiberius hisses through gritted teeth. "And what about my son?" My gaze trails to Maven before I realize the king doesn't mean Maven at all. Maven takes it in stride. He's used to being overlooked.
"Cal went after the shooters. He took a band of sentinels with him."
The memory of him, dark and angry as a flame, frightens me.
"And then the ballroom exploded. I don't know how many were still in there." Was there anything else, dear?
Coming from Alara, the term of endearment feels like an electric shock. She looks paler than ever, her breath coming in shallow pants. She's afraid.
Anything you remember?
There was a banner, attached to a spear. The Scarlet Guard did this.
Did they?
She says, raising a single eyebrow. I fight the urge to back away, to run from her and her whispers. At any moment I expect to feel her slither into my head, to pull out the truth. But instead, Ilara rips her eyes away and turns on the king.
You see what you've done?
Her lip curls over her teeth. In the light, they look like glittering fangs.
Me! You called the guards small and weak. You lied to our people!
Tiberius snarls back at her.
Your actions have weakened us against the danger, not mine.
And if you took care of this when you had the chance, when they were small and weak, this would have never happened. They rip at each other like starved dogs, each one trying to take a bigger bite.
Ilara, they were not terrorists then. I could not waste my soldiers and officers on hunting down a few Reds writing pamphlets. They did no harm.
Slowly, Ilara points to the ceiling.
Does that seem like no harm to you?
He has no answer for her, and she smirks, delighting in winning the argument. One day, you men will learn to pay attention, and all the world will tremble. They are a disease, one you allowed to take hold, and it's time to kill this disease where it grows. She stands from her chair, collecting herself. They are Red Devils, and they must have allies inside our own walls. I do my best to keep still, my eyes fixed on the floor.
I think I'll have a word with the servants. Officer Samos, if you would.
He jumps to attention, opening the vault door for her. She sweeps out, two sentinels in tow, like a hurricane of rage. Lucas goes with her, opening the heavy doors in succession, each one clanging farther and farther away. I don't want to know what the queen will do to the servants, but I know it will hurt, and I know what she will find. Nothing. Walsh and Holland fled with Farley, according to our plan. They knew it would be too dangerous for them after the ball, and they were right. The thick metal closes for a few moments, only to swing open again. Another magnetron directs it. Evangeline. She looks like hell in a party dress, her jewelry mangled and teeth on edge. Worst of all are her eyes, wild and wet and streaming with black makeup. Ptolemus. She weeps for her dead brother. Even though I tell myself I don't care, I have to resist the urge to reach out and comfort her. But it passes as soon as her companion enters the bunker behind her. There's smoke and soot on his skin, dirtying his once clean uniform. Normally I'd be concerned at the ragged, hateful look in Cal's eyes, but something else strikes fear into my bones. Blood stains his black uniform and drips over his hands. It is not silver. Red. The blood is red.
Mare, he says to me, but all his warmth is gone. Come with me. Now.
His words are directed at me, but everyone follows, pushing through the passages as he leads us to the cells. My heart hammers in my chest, threatening to explode out of me. Not Killorn, anyone but him. Maven keeps a hand on my shoulder, holding me close. At first I think he's comforting me, but then he tugs me back. He's trying to keep me from running ahead.
You should have killed him where he stood, Evangeline says to Cal.
Her fingers pluck at the red blood on his shirt.
I wouldn't leave the Red Devil alive.
Him. My teeth bite my lips, holding my mouth closed so I don't say something stupid. Maven's hand tightens like a claw on my shoulder, and I can feel his pulse quicken. For all we know, this might be the end of our game. Ilara will come back and shatter their brains, picking through the wreckage to discover how deep their plot goes. The steps to the cells are the same but seem longer, stretching down into the deepest parts of the hall. The dungeon rises to greet us, and no less than 6 sentinels stand guard. An icy chill runs through my bones, but I don't shiver. I can barely move. Four figures stand in the cell, each one bloody and bruised. Despite the dim light, I know them all. Walsh's eye is swollen shut, but she seems all right. Not like Tristan, leaning against the wall to take pressure off a leg wet with blood. There's a hasty bandage around the wound, torn from Killorn's shirt by the looks of it. For his part, Killorn looks unscathed, to my great relief. He supports Farley with an arm, letting her stand against him. Her shoulder is dislocated, one arm hanging at a strange angle, but that doesn't stop her from sneering at us. She even spits through the bars, a mix of blood and saliva that lands at Evangeline's feet. "Take her tongue for that!" Evangeline snarls, rushing at the bars. She stops short, one hand slamming against the metal. Though she could tear it away with a thought, ripping apart the cell and the people inside, she restrains herself. Farley holds her gaze, barely blinking at the outburst. If this is her end, she's certainly going to go with her head high. A little violent for a princess. Before Evangeline can lose her temper, Cal pulls her back from the bars. Slowly he raises a hand, pointing. "You." With a horrific lurch, I realize he's pointing. She's certainly going to go with her head high. A little violent for a princess. Before Evangeline can lose her temper, Cal pulls her back from the bars. Slowly he raises a hand, pointing. "You." With a horrific lurch, I realize he's pointing at Killorn. A muscle twitches in Killorn's cheek, but he keeps his eyes on the floor. Cal remembers him, from the night he brought me home.
"Mare, explain this!"
I open my mouth, hoping some fantastic lie will fall out, but nothing comes. Cal's gaze darkens.
"He's your friend! Explain this!"
Evangeline gasps and turns her wrath on me.
"You brought him here?" she screeches, jumping at me. "You did this?"
"I did nothing," I stammer, feeling all the eyes in the room on me. "I mean, I did get him a job here. He was at the lumber yards, and it's hard work, deadly work."
The lies tumble from me, each one quicker than the last.
He was my friend back in the village. I just wanted to make sure he was okay. I got him the job as a servant, just like..." My eyes trail to Cal. Both of us remember the night we first met, and the day that followed. I thought I was helping him. Maven takes a step toward the cell, looking at our friends like it's the first time he's ever seen them. He gestures to their red uniforms. "They seem to be only servants."
"I'd say the same, except we found them trying to escape through a drainpipe," Cal snaps. "Took us a while to drag them out."
"Is this all of them?" King Tiberius says, peering through the cell bars.
Cal shakes his head.
"There were more ahead, but they got to the river. How many, I don't know."
"Well, let's find out,"
Evangeline says, her eyebrows raised.
"Call for the queen, and in the meantime..."
She faces the king. Beneath his beard, he grins a little and nods. I don't have to ask to know what they're thinking about. Torture. The four prisoners stand strong, not even flinching. Maven's jaw works furiously as he tries to think of a way out of this, but he knows there isn't one. If anything, this might be more than we could hope for, if they manage to lie. But how can we ask them to? How can we watch them scream while we stand tall? Killorn seems to have an answer for me. Even in this awful place, his green eyes manage to shine. "I will lie for you."
"Cal, I leave the honor to you,"
the king says, resting a hand on his son's shoulder. I can only stare, pleading with wide eyes, praying Cal will not do as his father asks. He glances at me once, like somehow that counts as an apology. Then he turns to a sentinel, shorter than the others. Her eyes sparkle gray-white behind her mask.
"Sentinel Glycon, I find myself in need of some ice." What that means, I have no idea. But Evangeline giggles.
Good choice.
You don't need to see this, Maven mutters, trying to pull me away.
But I can't leave Killorn. Not now.
I angrily shrug him off, my eyes still on my friend. Let her stay, Evangeline crows, taking pleasure in my discomfort. This will teach her to treat Reds as friends. She turns back to the cell, waving open the bars. With one white finger, she points. Start with her! She needs to be broken. The sentinel nods and seizes Farley by the wrist, pulling her out of the cell. The bars slide back into place behind her, trapping the rest in. Walsh and Killorn rush to the bars, both of them the picture of fear. The sentinel forces Farley to her knees, waiting for her next order.
Sir?
Cal moves to stand over her, breathing heavily. He hesitates before speaking, but his voice is strong.
How many more of you are there?
Farley's jaw locks in place, her teeth together. She'll die before she talks.
Start with the arm.
The sentinel is not gentle, wrenching out Farley's wounded arm. Farley yelps in pain but still says nothing. It takes everything I have not to strike the sentinel.
And you call us the savages, Killorn spits, forehead against the bars.
Slowly the sentinel peels away Farley's blood-soaked sleeve and sets pale, cruel hands to her skin. Farley screams at the touch, but why, I can't say.
Where are the others? Cal questions, kneeling to look her in the eyes.
For a moment, she falls quiet, drawing a ragged breath. He leans in, patiently waiting for her to break. Instead, Farley snaps forward, headbutting him with all her strength.
We are everywhere, she laughs, but screams again as the sentinel resumes her torture.
Cal recovers neatly, one hand to his now broken nose. Another person might strike back, but he doesn't. Red pinpricks appear on Farley's arm, around the sentinel's hand. They grow with each passing second, sharp and shiny red points sticking straight out of now bluish skin. Sentinel, Glyakon, House Glyakon. My mind flies back to protocol to the house lessons. Shivers. With a lurch, I understand and I have to look away. That's blood, I whisper, unable to look back. She's freezing her blood. Maven only nods, his eyes grave and full of sorrow. Behind us, the sentinel continues to work, moving up Farley's arm. Red icicles, sharp as razors, pierce through her flesh, slicing every nerve in a pain I can't imagine. Farley's breath whistles through gritted teeth. Still, she says nothing. My heart races as the seconds tick by, wondering when the queen will return, wondering when our play will be truly over. Finally, Cal jumps to his feet.
Enough!
Another sentinel, a Skonos skin healer, drops down next to Farley. She all but collapses, staring blankly at her arm, now jagged with knives of frozen blood. The new sentinel heals her quickly, hands moving in a practiced fashion. Farley chuckles darkly as the warmth returns to her arm.
All to do it again, eh?
Cal folds his arms behind his back. He shares a glance with his father, who nods. Indeed, Cal sighs, looking back to the shiver. But she doesn't get a chance to continue.
Where is she?
A terrible voice screams, echoing down the stairs to us below. Evangeline whirls at the noise, rushing to the bottom of the stairs.
I'm here, she shouts back.
When Ptolemy's Samos steps down to embrace his sister, I have to dig my nails into my palm to keep from reacting. There he stands, alive and breathing and terribly angry. On the floor, Farley curses to herself. He only lingers for a moment and sidesteps Evangeline, a terrifying fury in his eyes. His armored suit is mangled at the shoulder, pulverized by a bullet.
but the skin beneath is unbroken. Healed. He prowls toward the cell, hands flexing. The metal bars quiver in their sockets, screeching against concrete.
Ptolemus, not yet, Cal growls, grabbing for him, but Ptolemus shoves the prince off.
Despite Cal's size and strength, he stumbles backward. Evangeline runs at her brother, pulling his hand.
No! We need them to talk!
With one shrug of his arm, he breaks her grip. Not even she can stop him. The bars crack, shrieking with his power as the cell opens to him. Not even the sentinels can stop him as he strides forward, moving quickly with practiced motions. Killorn and Walsh scramble, jumping back against the stone walls, but Ptolemus is a predator, and predators attack the weak. With his broken leg, barely able to move, Tristan doesn't stand a chance.
You will not threaten my sister again!
Ptolemus roars, directing the metal bars of the cell. One spears right through Tristan's chest. He gasps, choking on his own blood, dying. And Ptolemus actually smiles. When he turns on Killorn, murder in his heart, I snap. Sparks blaze to life in my skin. When my hand closes around Ptolemus's muscled neck, I let the sparks go. They shock into him, lightning dancing through his veins, and he seizes under my touch. The metal of his uniform vibrates and smokes, almost cooking him alive. And then he drops to the concrete floor, his body still shaking with sparks.
Ptolemus!
Evangeline scrambles to his side, reaching for his face. A shock jumps to her fingers, forcing her to fall back with a scowl. She rounds on me in a blaze of anger.
How dare you!
He'll be fine. I didn't hit him with enough to do any real damage. Like you said, we need them to talk. They can't do that if they're dead. The others stare at me with a strange mix of emotions, their eyes wide and afraid. Cal, the boy I kissed, the soldier, the brute, can't hold my gaze at all. I recognize the expression on his face. Shame. But because he hurt Farley, or because he couldn't make her talk, I don't know. At least Maven has the good sense to look sad, his stare resting on Tristan's still bleeding body. Mother can attend to the prisoners later, he says, addressing the king. But the people upstairs will want to see their king and know he is safe. So many have died. You should comfort them, Father. And you as well, Cal. He's playing for time. Brilliant Maven is trying to buy us a chance. Even though it makes my skin crawl, I reach out to touch Cal's shoulder. He kissed me once. He might still listen when I speak. He's right, Cal. This can wait. Still on the floor, Evangeline bares her teeth.
The court will want answers, not embraces. This must be done now. Your Majesty, rip the truth from them.
But even Tiberius sees the wisdom of Maven's words.
They will keep, he echoes, and tomorrow the truth will be known.
My grip tightens on Cal's arm, feeling the tense muscles beneath. He relaxes into my touch, looking like a great weight has fallen off him. The sentinels jump to attention and pull Farley back into the broken cell. Her eyes stay on me, wondering what the hell I have in mind. I wish I knew. Evangeline half-drags Ptolemus out, letting the bars knit together behind her.
You are weak, my prince, she hisses into Cal's ear.
I resist the urge to look back at Killorn, as his words echo in my head. Stop trying to protect me. I will not. Blood drips from my sleeve, leaving a spotted silver trail in my wake as we march to the throne room. Sentinels and security guard the immense door, their guns raised and aimed at the passageway. They don't move as we pass, frozen in place. Their orders are to kill, should the need arise. Beyond, the grand chamber echoes with anger and sorrow. I want to feel some shred of victory, but the memory of Killorn behind bars dampens any happiness I might have. Even the colonel's glassy eyes haunt me.
I move to Cal's side. He barely notices, his eyes burning at the floor. How many dead?
10 so far, he mutters.
3 in the shooting, 8 in the explosion, 15 more wounded. It sounds like he's listing groceries, not people. But they'll all heal. He jerks his thumb, gesturing to the healers running among the injured. I count 2 children among them, and beyond the wounded are the bodies of the dead, laid out before the king's throne. Bellicose Lareland's 2 sons lie next to him, with their weeping mother holding vigil over the bodies. I have to put a hand to my mouth to keep from gasping. I never wanted this.
Maven's warm hands take mine, pulling me past the gruesome scene to our place by the throne. Cal stands close by, trying in vain to wipe the red blood off his hands.
The time for tears is over, Tiberius thunders, fists clenching at his sides.
In complete unison, the sobs and sniffles through the chamber die out.
Now we honor the dead, heal the wounded, and avenge our fallen. I am the king. I do not forget. I do not forgive. I have been lenient in the past, allowing our red brothers a good life, full of prosperity, of dignity. But they spit upon us. They reject our mercy, and they have brought upon themselves the worst kind of doom.
With a snarl, he throws down the silver spear and red rag. It clatters across the floor with a sound like a funeral bell. The torn sun stares at us all.
These fools, these terrorists, these murderers will be brought to justice, and they will die. I swear on my crown, on my throne, on my sons, they will die.
A rumbling murmur goes through the crowd as each silver stirs. They stand as one, wounded or not. The metallic smell of blood is almost overpowering.
Strength, the court screams. Power, death.
Maven glances at me, his eyes wide and afraid. I know what he's thinking, because I think it too. What have we done? 21. Back in my room, I rip the ruined dress off, letting the silk fall to the floor. The king's words replay in my head, peppered with flashes of this terrible night. Killorn's eyes stand out through it all, a green fire burning me up. I must protect him, but how? If only I could trade myself for him again, my freedom for his. If only things were that simple anymore. Julian's lessons have never felt so sharp in my mind. The past is so much greater than this future. Julian.
Julian.
The residence halls crawl with sentinels and security, every one of them on edge. But I've long perfected the art of slipping by unnoticed, and Julian's door is not far away. Despite the hour, he's awake, poring over books. Everything looks the same, like nothing's happened. Maybe he doesn't know. But then I notice the bottle of brown liquor on the table, occupying a spot usually reserved for tea. Of course he knows.
In light of recent events, I would think our lessons have been canceled for the time being, he says, over the pages of his book.
Still he shuts it with a snap, turning his full attention on me.
Not to mention it's quite late.
I need you, Julian.
Does this have anything to do with the sun shooting? Yes, they've already thought up a clever name.
He points to the dark video screen in the corner.
It's been on the news for hours now. The king's addressing the country in the morning.
I remember the fluffy blonde newswoman reporting the Capitol bombing more than a month ago. There were few injuries then, and still the marketplace rioted. What will they do now? How many innocent Reds will pay?
Or is this about the 4 terrorists currently locked in the cells of this structure?
Julian presses on, measuring my response.
Excuse me, I mean 3.
Ptolemus Samos certainly lives up to his reputation.
They're not terrorists, I reply calmly, trying to keep myself in check.
Shall I show you the definition of terrorism, Mayor?
His tone stings.
Their cause might be just, but their methods... Besides, what you say doesn't matter.
He gestures to the video screen again.
They have their own version of the truth, and that's the only one people will hear.
My teeth grind together, painfully, bone on bone.
Are you going to help or not?
I am a teacher and somewhat of an outcast, in case you haven't noticed. What can I possibly do?
Julian, please.
I can feel my last chance slipping through my fingers.
You're a singer. You can tell the guards, make them do anything you want. You can set the prisoners free.
But he remains still, sipping peacefully at his drink. He doesn't grimace like men normally do. The bite of alcohol is familiar to him.
Tomorrow they'll be interrogated, no matter how strong they are, no matter how long they hold out. The truth will be found.
Slowly, I take Julian's hand, holding fingers worn rough by paper. This was my plan. I'm one of them. He doesn't need to know about Maven. It will only make him angrier. The half-fly does its job well. I can see it in Julian's eyes.
You did this?
He stammers.
The shooting? The bombing?
The bomb was unexpected. The bomb was a horror. He narrows his eyes, and I can see the cogs turning in his mind. Then he snaps entirely.
I told you! I told you not to get in over your head!
He slams a fist down on the table, looking angrier than I've ever seen him before.
And now!
He breathes, staring at me with so much sorrow it makes my heart hurt.
Now I must watch you drown?
If they escape. He throws back the rest of his drink with a gulp. With a snap of his wrist, he smashes the glass on the floor, making me jump.
And what about me? Even if I take away the cameras, the guards, memories, anything that could implicate either of us, the Queen will know.
Shaking his head, he sighs.
She'll take my eyes for this.
And Julian will never read again. How can I ask for that?
Then let me die.
The words stick in my throat.
I deserve it as much as they do.
He can't let me die. He won't. I am the little lightning girl, and I'm going to make the world change. When he speaks again, he sounds hollow.
He called my sister's death a suicide.
Slowly, he traces his fingers across his wrist, dwelling on a long-ago memory.
That was a lie, and I knew it.
She was a sad woman, but she never would have done such a thing. Not when she had Cal and Tybe. She was murdered, and I said nothing. I was afraid, and I let her die in shame. And since that day, I've been working to fix that. Waiting in the shadows of this monstrous world, waiting for my time to avenge her. He raises his eyes to me. They sparkle with tears. I suppose this will be a good place to start. It doesn't take long for Julian to figure out a plan. All we need is a magnetron and some blind cameras, and luckily I can provide both. Lucas knocks on my bedroom door not 2 minutes after I summon him.
What can I do for you, Mayor? He says, jumpier than usual.
I know his time overseeing the Queen's interrogation of servants must not have been easy. At least he'll be too distracted to notice I'm shaking.
I'm hungry.
The rehearsed words come easier than they should.
You know, dinner never happened, so I was wondering,
do I look like a cook? You should have called the kitchens. That's their job.
I don't think now's a good time for the servants to be roaming around. People are still pretty on edge, and I don't want anyone getting hurt because I didn't get dinner. You just have to escort me, that's all, and who knows, you might get a cookie out of it.
Sighing like an annoyed teenager, Lucas holds out an arm. As I take it, I glance at the cameras in the hall, making them die off. Here we go.
I should feel wrong about using Lucas, knowing firsthand what it's like to have your mind toyed with, but this is for Killorn's life. Lucas is still chattering when we turn the corner, running smack into Julian. "Lord Jacos," Lucas begins, moving to bow his head. But Julian takes him by the chin, moving quicker than I ever thought he could. Before Lucas can respond, Julian glares into his eyes, and the struggle dies before it even begins. His honeyed words, smooth as butter and strong as iron, fall on open ears. "Take us to the cells. Use the service halls. Keep us away from patrols. Do not remember this." Lucas, usually all smiles and jokes, falls into a strange, half-hypnotized state. His eyes glaze over, and he doesn't notice when Julian reaches down to take his gun. But he marches all the same, leading us through the maze of the hall. At each turn, I wait for the feel of electric eyes, shutting off everything in our path. Julian does the same to the guards, forcing them not to remember us as we pass. Together we make an unbeatable team, and it's not long before we stand at the top of the dungeon stairs. There will be sentinels down there, too many for Julian to take care of on his own. "Speak not a word," Julian hisses to Lucas, who nods in understanding. Now it's my turn to lead us. I expect to be afraid, but the dim light and the late hour feel familiar. This is where I belong, sneaking and lying and stealing. "Who is it? State your name and business," one of the sentinels shouts up at us. I recognize her voice. Glyakon, the shiver who tortured Farley. Perhaps I can convince Julian to sing her off a cliff. I draw myself up to my full height, though it's my voice and tone that matter most. "My name is Lady Marina Titanos, betrothed of the Prince Maven," I snap, moving down the steps with as much grace as I can. My voice is cold and sharp, mirroring Alara's and Evangeline's. I have strength and power, too. And I don't share my business with sentinels. At the sight of me, the four sentinels exchange glances, questioning one another. One, a large man with pig eyes, even looks me up and down in a rude manner. Behind the bars, Killorn and Walsh jump to attention. Farley doesn't move from her corner, arms curled around her knees. For a second I think she might be sleeping, until she moves and her blue eyes reflect the light. "I need to know, my lady," Glyakon says, sounding apologetic. She nods to Julian and Lucas, who follow me down. "Goes for you two as well. I would like a private audience with these," I throw as much disgust into my voice as I can, it's not hard, with the pig-eyed sentinel standing so close, "creatures. We have questions that must be answered and wrongs to repay, don't we, Julian?" Julian sneers, putting on a good show. "It'll be easy to make them sing." "Not possible, m'lady," Pig-eyed snorts. His accent is hard and rough, from Harbor Bay. "Our orders are to stay right here, all night. We move for no one." Once, a boy in the stilts called me a rotten flirt for charming him out of a good pair of boots. "You understand my position, don't you? I will be a princess soon, and the favor of a princess is a very valuable thing. Besides, the red rats must be taught a lesson. A painful one." Pig Eyes blinks sluggishly at me, thinking it over. Julian hovers at my shoulder, ready with his sweet words if I need them. Two heartbeats pass before Pig Eyes nods, waving to the others. "We can give you 5 minutes. My face hurts from smiling so widely, but I don't care. "Thank you so much. I am in your debt, all of you." They tromp away in a single file, their boots scuffing. As soon as they reach the top landing, I allow myself to hope. 5 minutes will be more than enough. Killorn almost jumps at the bars, eager to be free of his cell, and Walsh pulls Farley to her feet. But I don't move at all. I don't intend to free them, not yet. "Mare," Killorn whispers, puzzled at my hesitation, but I silence him with a look. "The bomb." Smoke and fire cloud my thoughts, bringing me back to the moment the ballroom exploded.
Tell me about the bomb.
I expect them to fall over themselves in apologies, to beg my forgiveness, but instead, the three exchange blank looks. Farley leans against the bars, her eyes on fire.
I don't know anything about that, she hisses, barely audible. I never authorized such a thing. It was supposed to be organized, with special targets. We do not kill at random, without purpose.
The Capitol? The other bombings?
You know those buildings were empty. No one died there. Not because of us, she says evenly.
I swear to you, Mayor, this was not our doing.
Do you really think we'd try to blow up our greatest hope? Killorn adds. I don't need to ask to know he means me.
Finally, I nod over my shoulder to Julian.
Open the cell, quietly.
Julian murmurs, his hands on Lucas's face. The magnetron complies, forcing the bars into an open O, wide enough to step through. Walsh comes out first, her eyes wide in amazement. Killorn is next, helping Farley fit through the bars. Her arm still dangles helplessly. The healer missed a spot. I gesture to the wall, and they move soundlessly, mice on stone. Walsh's eyes touch on Tristan's body, still lifeless in the cell, but she stays put beside Farley. Julian shoves Lucas in next to them before taking his spot next to the foot of the stairs, across from the freed prisoners. I take the other side, pressing myself in next to Killorn. Even though he spent the night in the cells, with a dead body for company, he still smells like home.
I knew you'd come, he whispers in my ear. I knew it.
But there's no time for pleasantries or celebrations, not until they're away, safely. Across the open gap of stairwell, Julian nods at me. He's ready.
Sentinel Glycon, may I have a word?
I shout up the stairs, laying the bait for our next trap. The shuffle of feet tells me she's taken it.
What is it, my lady?
When she reaches the floor, her eyes fly straight to the open cell and she gasps behind her mask. But Julian is too quick, even for a sentinel.
You went for a walk. You return to find this. You do not remember us. Call down one of the others.
He murmurs, his voice a terrible song.
Sentinel Tyros! You are needed, she says flatly.
Now you will sleep.
She drops almost before the last word leaves his lips, but Julian catches her around the middle and lays her gently down behind him. Killorn exhales in surprise, impressed by Julian, who allows himself a small, pleased smile. Tyros comes down the stairs next, confused but eager to serve. Julian does it again, singing his orders in a few whispered seconds. I didn't expect sentinels to be so stupid, but it makes sense. They're trained from childhood in the art of combat. Logic and intelligence are not their highest priorities. But the last two, Pig Eyes and the healer, are not complete fools. When Tyros calls out, ordering the skin healer sentinel to come down, they mutter to each other.
About finished, Lady Titanos?
Pig Eyes calls, his voice wary. Thinking quickly, I shout back to them.
Yes, we're finished. Your companions have returned to their posts. I want to make sure you do as well.
Oh, have they? Is that right, Tyros? With blinding speed, Julian kneels over the fainted Tyros. He pries his eyes open, holding the lids.
Say you've returned to your post. Say the lady is finished.
Return to my post. Tyros drones.
Hopefully the long stairwell and stone walls will distort his voice.
The lady is finished.
Pig Eyes grunts to himself.
Very well.
Their boots stamp against the steps, both coming down together. Two. Julian cannot handle two alone. I feel Killorn tense at my back, his fist clenching as he prepares for anything. With one hand I push him back against the wall, while the other grows white with sparks. The footsteps stop, just beyond the opening. I can't see them, and neither can Julian, but Pig Eyes breathes like a dog. The healer is there as well, waiting just beyond our reach. In total silence,
It's hard not to hear the click of a gun. Julian's eyes widen, but he stands firm, one hand closing around his stolen weapon. I don't even want to breathe, knowing the edge we're all standing on. The walls seem to shrink, boxing us into a stone coffin with no escape. I feel very calm when I slide out in front of the steps, my sparking hand behind my back. I expect to feel bullets at any minute, but the pain never comes. They won't shoot me, not until I give them a good reason. Is there some problem, sentinels? I sneer, corking an eyebrow like I've seen Evangeline do 100 times. Slowly, I take a step up, bringing the pair of them into view. They stand side by side, fingers itching on twin triggers. I'd prefer it if you wouldn't point your guns at me. Pig Eyes glares at me outright, but it does nothing to faze me. You are a lady. Act like it. Act for your life. Where's your friend? Oh, he's coming along. One of the prisoners has a mouth on her. She needed some extra attention. The lie comes so easily. Practice really does make perfect. Grinning, Pig Eyes lowers his gun a bit. The Scott bitch had to show her the back of my hand myself, he chuckles. I laugh with him and dream about what lightning could do to his fleshy, pale eyes. As I move closer, the skin healer puts one hand on the metal rail, blocking my way. I do the same. It feels cold in my hand and solid. Easy does it, I tell myself, pushing just enough energy into my sparks. Not enough to burn, not enough to scar, but enough to take care of them both. It's like threading a needle, and for once, I'm the sewing expert. Above me, the healer doesn't laugh with his friend. His eyes are bright silver, and with the mask and fiery cloak, he looks like a demon from a nightmare. What's behind your back? He hisses through the mask. I shrug, allowing myself one more step. Nothing, Sentinel Skonos. The next words are ragged. You lie. We react in the same second, blasting into action. The bullet hits me in the stomach, but my lightning blazes up the metal rail, through his skin and into the healer's brain. Pig Eyes shouts, firing his own gun. The bullet digs into the wall, missing me by inches, but I don't miss him, lashing with the ball of sparks behind my back. They slide past me, both unconscious, their muscles twitching with shocks. And then I'm falling. I briefly wonder if the stone floor will smash my skull. I suppose that's easier than bleeding to death. Instead, long arms catch me. Mare, you'll be fine, Killorn whispers. His hand covers my stomach, trying to stop the bleeding. His eyes are green as grass. They stand out in a world fading to darkness. It's nothing at all. Put those on, Julian snaps to the others. Farley and Walsh rush past me to pull on the fire-red cloaks and masks. You too. He yanks Killorn off me, almost throwing him across the room in his haste. Julian, I choke out, trying to grab him. I must thank him. But he's beyond my reach, kneeling over the healer. He rips open the sentinel's eyelids and sings, ordering him to wake up. The next thing I know, the healer stares down at me, his hands on my wound. It only takes a second before the world shifts back to normal. In the corner, Killorn breathes a sigh of relief and pulls a cloak over his head. Her as well, I point to Farley. Julian nods and directs the healer over to her. With an audible pop, her shoulder snaps back into place. Much obliged, she says, pulling the mask over her face. Walsh stands over us all, her mask forgotten in her hand. She stares at the fallen sentinels, jaw agape. Are they dead? She asks, whispering like a frightened child. Julian looks up from Pig Eyes, finished singing to him. Hardly. This lot will be awake in a few hours, and if you're lucky, no one will know you're gone until then. I can work with a few hours. Farley smacks at Walsh, snapping her back to reality. Get your head on straight, girl. We've got a lot of running to do tonight. It doesn't take long to slip them through the last few passages. Even so, my fear grows with each passing heartbeat, until we find ourselves in the middle of Cal's garage. The slack-jawed Lucas tears a hole in the metal door like he's ripping paper, revealing the night beyond. Walsh hugs me, taking me by surprise. "I don't know how," she mutters, "but I hope you become queen one day. Imagine what you could do then, the Red Queen." I have to smile at the impossible thought. "Go, before your nonsense rubs off on me." Farley isn't one for hugs, but she does pat me on the shoulder. We'll meet again, and soon.
"Not like this, I hope."
Her face splits into a rare, toothy smile. Despite the scar, I realize she's very pretty.
"Not like this," she echoes, before slipping out into the night with Walsh.
"I know I can't ask you to come with me," Killorn mutters, moving to follow them. He stares at his hands, examining scars I know better than my own mind. "Look at me, you idiot." Sighing, I force myself to shove him toward freedom. "The cause needs me here. You need me here, too. What I need and what I want are two very different things." I try to laugh, but I can't find the strength. "This is not our end, Mare," Killorn murmurs, embracing me. He laughs to himself, the noise vibrating in his chest.
"Red Queen
has a nice ring to it."
"Get on, you fool."
Never have I smiled so brightly and still felt so sad. He spares me one last glance and nods to Julian before stepping out into the darkness. The metal knits back together behind him, blocking my friends from sight. Where they're going, I don't want to know. Julian has to pull me away, but he doesn't scold me for my long goodbye. I think he's more preoccupied with Lucas, who, in his dazed state, has begun to drool. 22. That night I dream of my brother, Shade, coming to visit me in the darkness. He smells like gunpowder, but when I blink, he disappears and my mind screams what I already know. Shade is dead. When morning comes, a series of shuffles and slams makes me bolt awake, sitting up in my bed. I expect to see sentinels, Cal, or a murderous Ptolemus, ready to rip me apart for what I've done. But it's just the maids bustling in my closet. They look more harried than usual, and pull down my clothes with abandon. What's going on? In the closet the girls freeze. They bow, hands full of silk and linen. As I come closer, I realize they're standing over a set of leather trunks. Are we going somewhere?
Orders, my lady, one says, her eyes lowered.
We only know what we're told.
Of course. Well, I'm just going to get dressed then.
I reach for the nearest outfit, intending to do something for myself for once, but the maids beat me to it. 5 minutes later, they have me painted and ready, dressed in odd leather pants and a flouncy shirt. I'd much prefer my training suit over everything else, but it's apparently not proper to wear the thing outside of sessions. Lucas? I ask the empty hallway, half expecting him to pop out from an alcove. But Lucas is nowhere to be found, and I head off to protocol, expecting him to cross my path. When he doesn't, a trill of fear ripples through me. Julian made him forget last night, but maybe something slipped through the cracks. Maybe he's being questioned, punished, for the night he can't remember and what we forced him to do. But I'm not alone for long. Maven steps into my path, his lips corked into an amused smile. You're up early. Then he leans in, speaking in a low whisper. Especially for having such a late night. I don't know what you mean, I try for an innocent tone. The prisoners are gone, all three of them. Disappeared into thin air. I put a hand to my heart, letting myself look shocked for the cameras. By my colors! A few reds escaped from us? That seems impossible. It does indeed. Though the smile remains, his eyes darken slightly. Of course, that brings everything into question. The power outages, the failing security system, not to mention a troop of sentinels with blank spots across their memories. He stares pointedly at me.
I return his sharp glance, letting him see my unease.
Your mother interrogated them?
She did.
And will